stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be catching you up, recapping what I talked about a couple of weeks ago about the cover story and how that stands between us and who we really are. And I'll also be playing an interview I did with Kit Moran, a remarkable singer and painter and all-around artist. And I'll be playing a couple of cuts from Kit's CD. So hang on. Here comes the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. If you've been listening over the past few weeks, you know that I've been rebroadcasting interviews that I did last December with the Spirit Ranch Recording Studio crew. And if you've only heard the show over the last few weeks, then you don't know that those shows are, the format of those shows is different than what the format of this show usually is. The theme of The Lynn Show is discovering and being able to become who we really are. And the format of the show is usually the first half. In the first half, I talk about what gets between us and becoming who we really are. And in the second half of the show, I do interviews like those in the last few weeks with people who make their life or their living with their art. I do those interviews because at least in those areas of their life, people who make their life or their living with their art are who they really are. That's because in this culture, it's so difficult to be an artist of any kind that you really have to be that in order to pursue that with your life. So, returning to the original format of the show now, I am going to spend the first half of this show talking about becoming who we really are. I'm going to recap a little bit what I was talking about 4 weeks ago before I did the rebroadcast of the Spirit Ranch guys. And following that, I'm going to do an interview with Kit Moran. Kit Moran is a woman who has made her entire life, having decided at 4 to be a singer, with her music. And more recently, with writing and painting. Kit is a person whose entire life has been dedicated to her art. And you'll hear at the very beginning of the interview, I'm saying, and now I'm here with Kit Moran, having just interviewed her lovely husband. I did, in fact, interview Mike Moran, and I will be playing the interview I did with him and the interview that I did with the couple next week. But today, the whole second half of the show is going to be Kit, and I'm going to play for you 2 cuts from her CD. Her CD is called Love Touches, and it is certainly true that you will be touched by Kit Moran. She's pretty remarkable. So I'm going to play one cut before I do the interview and then one after. And I'll tell you what they are as we get closer to. But before I play the interview with Kit, I'm going to recap a little bit of what I was talking about before. I was talking about cover stories before. We each, as children, pay careful attention, obsessive careful attention, to the reactions of our parents. You know what I just thought now, I hadn't thought about it before, but if you have a dog, you can often see the way it's looking at you. You know, are you going to give me a treat? Are you going to give me some of that food you're eating? Are you not? Are you happy with me? Are you mad? Oh my God, you're mad. Hang my head. Drop my tail. Well, small children are very like that. We only have one really driving force in the early years of our life, and that is not to upset those giants on whom our life depends, who we call our parents. We observe them very, very closely, and we know, without a question of a doubt, what it is about us that they like and what it is that they don't. What it is that brings the smiles, what it is that brings the frowns. And in some unfortunate cases, worse than frowns. Anything from neglect to abuse. So, in order to please these parents, these people on whom our life depends, we evaluate. Ooh, when I smiled, they seemed to like that. When I cried, they didn't. Or, in the case of some families, when I cried, well, that brought mommy out and she took care of me and she, you know. But when I was smiling and happy, she pretty much ignored me, so maybe she would prefer to have a child who cries. This isn't conscious. It's not intellectual. We're not sitting there figuring it out. But in the way that all creatures perform in self-defense, we begin to lead with those qualities, those aspects of ourself, which seem to bring the reaction we wanted, and we begin to diminish use of those activities, qualities, capacities, skills, which seem to bring a response that we didn't want. Over time, all those qualities, skills, capacities, ways of being, behaviors, whatever it is you want to call them, that brought the response that mostly worked for us, become what we actually think we are. And everything else, we hide. In the beginning, we hide it from our parents, but over time, we hide it from ourselves. The bundle of qualities which we demonstrate and say, this is me, I call that our cover story. Just like a spy, we're using the story that's going to get the reaction we want. And all the rest of it, goes undercover, becomes our undercover. Now, the irony here is that all those other capacities, qualities, behaviors, skills, ways of being, they didn't go away. They're still there. There in a box on the back shelf of our psyche. We are, for the most part, in denial for them. We do not believe they are us anymore. So, if you had a parent who delighted in your joy and your happiness and your silliness and your play acting and all that, and was either uncomfortable or frightened by or downright critical of your sadness, then you might find it hard to cry. You might say things like, well, I don't know, I just never cry. It just never happens. Tears never come to my eyes. I don't know. You might have a reputation as jolly, cheery, you know, always smiling. You may be in denial for any sadness or distress. And again, that doesn't mean that you don't have it. It just means that it's hiding from you. Now, this might work really very well for you in your childhood. You know, you picked up the right thing and you demonstrated the right thing and you got the right responses from your family and they encouraged that. But it may not work so well for you later in life when you are unable to respond appropriately when somebody hurts your feelings or disappoints you. You are unable to demonstrate your distress or your sadness, so other people don't know that they've hurt you, offended you, or worse. You are then not able to defend yourself from certain kinds of behaviors. Well, that, in a nutshell, is the story of cover story. The reason this is important is, as I just finished saying, there may and almost always is reasons to use your undercover qualities later in life. But we have so well hidden them that we don't believe they're there, and because we don't believe they're there, we also are unable to surface them. So, I'm going to continue to talk about cover story, how to figure out what your cover story is, how to assess what you might have put undercover, how to recover your undercover. Those will be the topics for shows in the future. But now I'm going to move to my... Oh my gosh, I forgot all about saying how you could reach me and all that stuff. So, of course, I have a website, and it is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow.com. Don't forget the E at the end of Lynn. And if you have any questions about this question, about cover story, undercover, what else I talk about, please go up on the website. There is a spot to click for podcasts, and you can hear the old shows. You can hear what I have said about cover story in the past, because I have talked about it. And now, before I go to the interview with Kit, as I said, I'm going to play a cut from her CD, Love Touches. And, oh, good, I can give you this information here. Kit's email. No, I guess this is her website. Kit's website is kittmoran.com, Kit Moran. .com, and you can certainly get the CD there, find out where Kit might be playing, all kinds of other things. So I'm going to play the cut, How Do You Keep the Music Playing? And you're in for a big treat. Kit Moran is a very, very special singer. If you've been listening to the show, you know I am also a singer, and the song at the head of the show and the song at the end of the show are songs from my own CD. So I'm really picky about singers, and Kit is really special. Well, I don't have to tell you that. You'll know it in a second. Here, Kit Moran singing How Do You Keep the Music Playing, followed by a short public service announcement, and then my interview with Kit.
How do you keep the music playing? How do you make it last? How do you keep the song from fading too fast?
Thank you. Mommy going to be here, Grandma?
I'm sure she'll be here, sweetheart. She's not picking up.
She can't be doing this again. She already missed her birthday dinner. She can't miss the first recital.
Do you think our daughter is drinking again?
Problem drinking hurts families and friends, but there's help and hope. Al-Anon family groups are for anyone troubled by someone else's drinking. For a meeting near you, call 1-888-4-Al-Anon. A message from Al-Anon family groups.
Okay, so here I am with Kit Moran, just having spoken to her really delightful husband, Mike.
Oh.
Mike, yeah, really. Very, so sweet. And I'm still at their lovely house. Your house is beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm real impressed.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm just going to tell you what I told Mike and what I tell everybody.
Go ahead.
I interview people who make their living or their life with their art, which you clearly do.
Yes.
And I ask, how did it happen? How did you find it? How did it find you? How did it capture you? When did you know?
Well, I actually knew that I was going to be a singer when I was about 3 years old.
Oh, God.
I didn't know if I could sing. I didn't know if I could act. But this was something I was going to do. And I, you know, was a good little Catholic girl, and I prayed every day that I'd be a good actress in both ways.
In both ways?
Well, you know, a good girl.
Oh my God.
And
yes.
A good actress.
Good was really important.
That was very important.
Okay, yeah. So now, it's clear that you knew at three. Do you know how you knew? Do you know what...
No, I thought I was born that way, and I thought everybody was born knowing what they were going to do in their life.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember...
Would that it were so.
I remember my father talking about this girl across the street from us who was graduating. I was about 8 years old, probably. She was graduating from college, and I heard the conversation saying she doesn't know what she wants to do yet. And I went, what? That's the first time I realized that you were not born knowing.
Yes. Well, that not everybody was born knowing.
Right.
Okay, but had you heard a singer? I mean, where...
I don't know. I don't remember that, but I do remember asking my mother for a record player, and I saw Peter Pan on the TV, and that's what I wanted to do. So they
Mary
got
Martin.
Me Mary Martin. Mm-hmm. So they got me. You know, it was 45s back then,
yeah.
And so they got me the set of Peter Pan. I learned the whole thing, and I entertained my family.
I'll bet you did. How old were you?
I was three when they...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I learned everything, and then I practiced Peter Pan till I was 8 years old, and then finally they had a police athletic league in the little town that I lived in, Carteret, New Jersey, had a show. And so, you know, there was a call in the schools, and they said, you know, come out and audition for the PAL minstrel show. So I went there, and they're like looking, all right, who wants to go next? And they had like two rows of kids, you know, like this, and I'm going, I've got my hand following them in the face with my hand, me, you know. So absolutely, I was so not shy. I didn't know enough to be shy. So they said, well, okay. You know, so I got up and I sang, we're bloody buccaneers, and each a murderous crook. We massacre Indians, kill little boys, and take them to Captain Hook. I did all the parts. And so they said, well, okay then, you know. They just loved me, and they put me in the first part of the show and the second part of the show. And they wanted to dress me up and everything. I mean, I was like their little darling, and my mother was like totally embarrassed. I can buy her clothes. No, no, we want to do that. And I remember I could buy socks, and I wanted the frills on them, on the frill. Yeah. And my grandmother made my dress, a little gingham dress with little lace coming out of the bottom, the whole thing. So that was the beginning. I mean, this was going to be my life.
Clearly, yeah, no, clearly.
Life.
And you were eight?
Yes.
And for the show, did you do Peter Pan?
I did. I did a whole bunch of Peter Pan. I did I've Got a Crow, mm-hmm. And that one I did were Bloody Buccaneers, and a couple of other songs from Peter Pan, too.
So when did you graduate from Peter Pan?
The other thing, my mother, we would get all the kids from the neighborhood to put on plays.
Your mother?
My mother. And we had like a Dutch door. Remember Dutch doors?
Yeah,
half doors.
Right, half doors.
You know.
Right.
So we would. I was always Peter Pan, of course.
Yes.
And I'd get up on the half door because there was a little ledge on the half door, and
right.
I would get up on and jump
fly.
And fly.
That's right.
So and then when I was 10, my father started taking me to New York to take lessons at Eva Leone's something that was on 70th or 72nd Street in New York. And so I started singing with that group, and we worked at Carnegie Recital Hall,
mm-hmm.
and we worked at BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music,
yeah.
So I did Carmen and La Boheme and all these, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in the children's, you know. So it was, you know, that was...
It was a real training.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so then, all right, so how old are you now? In that?
I'm 10 by now.
I see.
And then, you know, I just started doing a lot of community theater, and then...
Your family, how did they feel about this?
they just went along with the flow,
yeah.
You know.
Okay, so, all right, you're 12, you're 15, you're 17, you're doing community theater, you're singing whenever you can.
I have a band now.
A band?
We do high school, and we do swim clubs, and then when I was 15, we made myself look old. I put my hair up in a bun, and I sang in a really sleazy bar in Perth Amboy called the Pink Elephant, and that was the beginning of singing in bars and nightclubs.
Yeah, That was the cabaret start,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay, so then what?
And then I did some supper clubs, and then when I graduated from high school, I worked for a year and then took that money and went to school in New York called American Musical and Dramatic Academy. And mm-hmm. at the time, it was on Bleecker Street.
Mm.
And that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. And I have a friend still from that time, one of my absolutely best friends, and Laura, and we've stayed friends since then. So then I met Mike. I was very young when I met Mike.
Yeah.
I was almost 23.
Wow. How did you meet?
We met in another sleazy bar in New York.
Of course.
Yeah.
He was playing.
He was playing, and I needed a band. I needed a new band, and somebody gave me a dime and said, here, call Mike Moran. They've got a band, and they're playing somewhere, and he needs a singer. So I called up, and I heard his voice. I said, oh, he's nice. So I went over to a I guess he came to see me, and that was... I thought he was really, really funny. I had not heard him play yet, but I thought he had a great sense of humor. He was saying things, and his humor is very quiet and dry, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, this guy is hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
So we started working together and
kept working together.
Yeah.
Clearly, you knew what you wanted.
Yeah. What's that about, you know?
Who cares?
Yeah, right.
It's really lovely.
And that was, I guess, in May. Yes, it was Mother's Day. Mother's Day. And that was one of his very funny comments. We were in a bar, and I was working in this bar on Mother's Day, and there was not a woman in there.
Wow.
And Mike made some very funny comment about it, and I'm thinking, he's very observant and very funny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we met, and we've been working together ever since.
Yeah. He mentioned Merv Griffin. Are you going to tell me about
that? Oh, sure. Merv, I'd been doing a lot of traveling. We were doing Top 40, And we eventually, we were doing jazz, and then we went, you know, to make a living.
Right.
We had a top 40 cover band, and we worked so much. It was amazing.
We're still in the East Coast?
We're still in the East Coast, yes, North Jersey. And we finally looked at each other and said, I mean, we could take our own vacation. That's how much we were working. 6-7 days a week, every month of the year.
Wow.
And finally, we looked at each other and said, is this why we're in showbiz? Mm-hmm. You know, this is not why I started singing. So we disbanded and started working in New York at a place called Gregory's, and took a major pay cut. We had a kid at the time, too, so this was really brave of us. But, you know, when you follow your bliss, things happen. And while we were working there in this tiny little nightclub, we got so many fans that I said I want to do an album. And everybody, all the people that would come in there and drink and listen to us, put up the money for our first CD.
Oh, my God.
And we said, well, you know, we don't know if this will ever go anywhere.
Right.
We'd like, oh, no, we'll take it as a tax write-off. Just keep it. We don't want the money back. We just hope it goes well.
Oh, my God.
So, and it actually did very well. But that kind of started it. And then there was another woman who's just an incredible singer, and she does a lot of cabaret in New York, totally different singing from mine, you know, she's very theatrical. She's not like a lounge singer at all. Somebody had called from Merv Griffin's camp, called one of the critics from New York, cabaret critics, and said, you know, can you send me 5 names of people that can open up Merv's lounge in Atlantic City? So this guy gives Ron Walker, the 5 names. Not one of them was mine. So he calls up this woman named Marta Sanders, and Marta says, oh, okay, you know, very confident. She says, okay, who are the people what are the other names that they gave you? So he rattles them off, and she says, well, you know what, they're all good. They're all going to be good. She says, I'm going to send you my video, but I'm not going to be the one you pick. I'm really good, but it's not what you're looking for. You're looking for Kit Moran. You don't have her on your list. You got to call Kit Moran. Here's her number. Call her. Get her to send you her video. So they called me, and I sent the video, and Merv, you know, he's the one that picked it, and he looked at my video, and he says, she's the one I want to open my lounge with. So I opened it with Jack Sheldon and Marty Brill and me, and they wanted me to do 6 weeks. 6 nights a week, 6 weeks. And I was petrified. I said, I'm only going to do 3.
When was
this? This is 89.
Wow.
Yeah. So, sure enough, I did 3 weeks, and they just kept asking me to come back. And so, I did that for about 3 years in the lounge with Merv. And then I called up Bob Chambers, who was the entertainment manager, and I said, well, Bob, what do you got for me for next year? Because, you know, they kind of like to give you the schedule.
Right.
And he says, well, you know, Kit, Merv has, he's got different ideas for you. We want you to sing in the restaurant this year. And I said, oh, okay. And he says, well, yeah, you know, it's going to be like, you know, we want you to, it's like table to table and stuff like that. And I went, oh, okay. And he says, can you do that? I said, oh, yeah, sure, I can do
right,
that.
Yeah, right.
And I'm looking over and I'm thinking out loud, I'm going, I can't do that. Oh, my God. I was like, oh, no. But, you know.
I do know, right?
Yeah, you do what you got to do.
Right.
So I said, okay. So I did it for 6 weeks, and I remember standing there at the back the first day, and I had a wonderful piano player. I didn't work with Mike at this one because Merv had already hired. He had people on his staff, and they had health insurance. They had he was amazing. He was just amazing. So I'm standing in the back room before they open up the doors for the restaurant, and I'm standing there with Glenn Lamison, who was the maitre d', who we're still best friends as well. So we're standing back there, and I went, I'm looking out there, and I said, boy, I hope this works out. And he's going, yeah, me too. Well, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I mean, it was a different way for me to work.
Yeah, but I see it in you now.
But it's very intimate. I mean, it really did teach me an awful lot. It taught me about space between people. Mm-hmm. When you're singing that close to them, you have to know how to get your space going.
Right, right.
But Merv also had me doing the big shows. When he would have, like, the Coconut Ballroom, or he'd have, like, these in the big theater. So he would pull me out of the restaurant and put me on the stage. And I did shows with Rosemary Clooney and, you know, I mean, all these, anybody that he had there doing a show with him, I was there with him.
Wow.
So he was very, very good to me. I mean, it was probably one of the most fun times in my life.
Yeah, but how long did it last altogether?
From 89 to, I guess about 2000. About 2000, 2001.
Wow. It's a very long run.
Yep. And I worked with, I didn't work with Mike that much over there. I mean, because Merv had these people, I worked with Lisa T on the piano, and we were two women, and we kicked butt.
I'll bet you did. I'll bet you did. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2001.
And then I started working in all the other casinos, you know, after they closed the restaurant. And Merv was out of there. And then so I worked at the Taj Mahal. We used to call it the Taj Mahal. And where else? Showboat. I worked there for a couple of years with Lisa. And then, you know, some clubs all around. And then things started really, really drying up.
Yeah.
Really drying up. I guess it was the beginning of the economy. What did we know? We didn't know anything.
Right.
You know, why is it doing this? And we were working at the top of the Trop, Lisa and I, and it was like this great gig, and we were getting standing ovations and this and that, but we only had like a 6-week contract. So we get a call from the agent saying they want you to audition for the same gig we're doing, getting standing ovations. Now they want us to audition. And we could not make those auditions for one reason or another. We couldn't get there. And so I said, well, let me send them my tapes, my CDs. Can they come up and see us in the room that they want us to work in?
Right?
Nope. Not nobody. Oh. Nothing. Nobody would come up. I sent them my CDs, my videos, everything, and they sent it back to me unopened and gave the job to somebody else.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was just like, are you kidding? So, but they gave it to a much younger person for the fraction of what they were paying me. So, you know what happened.
Right, right. And so it's just as well you didn't go up to audition because
they were going to offer me a lot less than they were paying me then.
Right.
So, so everything started drying up. And Mike and I had been looking at Florida for a long time. We'd been looking at the East Coast because that's where all our family is.
Yes.
And, but we never felt there was a fit there. We didn't have, there wasn't a fit. And every jazz club we went over, when we went into, it wasn't jazz. I mean, it was, anything that wasn't hard rock is considered jazz, you know.
Yeah.
So Dominic Mancini, somebody that we, mm-hmm. Our bass player, who we worked with for years in South Jersey, said, you got come down and see what's going on down here. So Mike and I said, okay. So we flew in, we went to a place in Anna Maria Island. Is that the name? I want to call it Anna Maria Alberghetti Island. And so everybody's sitting there like, but it's a restaurant, small restaurant, and they're applauding for everybody, you know. And Mike and I are going, what? And then we go on St. Armand's Circle, and the Crab and Finn has the guy playing the piano,
outside,
a real piano outside.
Right.
And we go, whoo! And then we go to something at the Players Theater, and there's like five great musicians, five great singers. And we're going, whoa, this is the middle of the week.
Right.
And we said, we're in. We went back up north and said, we're selling everything. We're coming down here.
Right.
So then we did it.
Yeah.
And we started working right away. And you know, like, it was great. And then my girlfriend, Janina, Janina Sebesky, she and I were on the phone all the time. She says, why don't we write something so we can work together?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, all right, well, you know, write something for ourselves. So we were on the phone 9-10 hours a day, and we wrote a show, but we wrote ourselves out of it. And we wrote a show called Chick Soup, which is about four women who meet in a gynecologist's office. And basically, it's about friendship and how women who don't know each other
can be friends.
Can be friends like that.
Right.
Hello.
Yeah, that's right.
So so that's what we did. So we wrote this show. It's like an hour and a half long. And then it was going to be produced for a ladies' luncheon thing. So we cut it down to an hour. And then Janina sent it to this theater in New Jersey called... the Chatham Playhouse, the Jersey Voices out of Chatham Playhouse. And out of hundreds of entries, they chose ours to produce. So it's like 5 one-act plays. So then they asked us if we could
cut it
down again.
Yeah, right.
We said, oh, we do, sure. So we did, and they took it. So it's being produced July 30th, 30, 31st, and 1st of August, and 6th, 7th, and 8th. And they'll videotape it, and then, so we'll have a copy of that, and hopefully we'll be able to,
get other productions.
Get it around the country.
Get it on the road.
Because it's a celebration of friendship.
Yeah, no.
It's very warm.
Is it a musical?
Yes, it's a musical. Yep. Words, music. I wrote lyrics, and Janina and I wrote lyrics. She wrote the music, and we wrote the book together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, that's
Thank you
wonderful.
Very much. Thank you. So, in my spare time, I paint.
Of course you do.
These are some of my paintings.
Wow.
That's called Gulf Moon. I actually sold that.
Yay.
Yeah. And I sold the gicle of my bird. And I sold, I've got a fish in there, a big fish, I sold that.
Yeah.
I did a show with the bird, and somebody wanted the bird, but it was too big. So they said, you know, I said, well, I can make a gicle of it, which is like a digital print. So I made it smaller, and they bought that.
How lovely.
Yeah.
So when did you start to paint?
Oh, a couple of years ago.
Did you suddenly think, oh, yeah. I forgot, I always wanted to be a painter?
Just about. I did, and I went into class, and it was a Christmas thing, and Mike said, what do you want for Christmas? And I'm thinking, what do I want for Christmas? I said, well, we were going to somebody's house, and she's an artist. And I said, I know, I want painting lessons. He said, okay, that's great. So a couple of months later, I got myself situated, got a painting class, and I said, what the heck? I have nothing to lose.
That's
I'm just
right.
going to go for it.
That's right.
Just do it.
And look at this. Oh, my God.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. It's really wonderful.
I just won a couple of best of shows at some art centers, Northport Art Center, and then I won third place at the Punta Gorda Visual Art Center.
My God.
And, yeah.
It's lovely.
Thank you.
So it's a life of art.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, how hard is this, you know? I mean, I play tennis every morning.
Yeah, right.
I come home, have lunch with my husband, and then
right.
paint all afternoon, and then
sing
go to work.
In the evening, right? No. You're gonna make all those people out there who are saying, should I do that?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I never put a brush to a canvas or oil to a canvas, and I said, what have I got to lose?
Do you want to tell them how old you were when you did that?
2 years ago.
I wasn't going to ask.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I don't know how old you are.
Oh,
but that
oh well, I'm 58.
So you were 56 when you started to paint. See that?
Never too late.
Never too late. Never too late.
I think I'm even younger than Grandma Moses.
Why not?
Yeah, a little more time.
Yes. All right, so I always ask, is there anything I didn't ask you that I should have? So think about that.
Oh. No, I'm very good at volunteering information.
Yeah, right, okay. And the other thing I like to ask is there anything you want to say about,
Well, I think you've actually said it, but there might be more, about making a life with an art.
Well, you have to have perseverance. Mm-hmm. You have to really love it, because there's not a lot of money in it unless, you know, you luck out.
You're lucky.
Our daughter is a potter.
Mm.
She was living in Vermont and New Hampshire and working up there and making a living at pottery.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So she came down here and I think she wants to go back now. You really have to say, take the chance and follow your bliss. Mm-hmm. And you have to really understand that you may not have a lot of money. But it's something you're compelled. You have to do it. You just have you have to do it.
Yeah, it's what everybody says.
Yeah.
It's stunning to me. The writers say this, the musicians say this, the actors say this, the fine artists say it. Everybody says the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Then that's a good place to stop. So you want to get your husband and we'll do a couple things?
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lynn.
And there you have the not only multi-talented but very delightful Kit Moran. And as you heard at the end of the interview, she went off to get her husband, and we did, in fact, do a couple interview, which I will play next week, and I will also play the interview that I did with Mike Moran, her husband, musician, composer, supporter, and you will get to hear not only Mike's story, but also his music. You've already heard him playing behind Kit in How Do You Keep the Music Playing, and you will hear him playing behind her on the cut I'm about to do, Love Dance. I'd never heard this song before I heard Kit do it, but it's really wonderful. It's a very unique and unusual song, and she does it, I'm sure, as well as the composer would want it to be done. So here now is Kit Moran doing Love Dance.
From too much talk to silent touches, inside.
There you have it, Kit Moran singing Love Dance, and behind her, her husband, Mike Moran. And hopefully you will tune in next week and listen to the interview with both of them. As you know, if you've been listening, I spend the first half of the show the way I did today, talking about the kinds of things that get between us and what we want to do, how you can become who you really are, and what might be stopping you from becoming who you really are. Then the second half of the show, I interview a person who makes their living or their life with their art, like Kit and her husband, Mike. And sometimes the interviews are so long or so compelling that I spend the whole hour on them and put off talking about how you get in the way of being your real self. And that's what's going to happen next week. It's going to be pretty much, the whole show will be my interview first with Mike and then a cut from his CD. Well, actually, it's the CD. Kit Moran sings the Mike Moran songbook, but it's an instrumental version of a song of his. And then there'll be my interview with Kit and Mike and another song from the CD, because I imagine that, like me, you can't get enough of listening to Kit sing. So I'm going to play another cut in that show. But now I am closing in on the end of this show, and so I need to thank yet again, over and over and over and over and, well, never mind that, Josh Hackney, without whom there would be no show. Josh comes and makes the sound as good as it can possibly be, corrects my flaws, helps me when I can't remember how to do what I used to know how to do, shows me things, new things, that I didn't know how to do, and then does the things I can't do. In a show in the, well, maybe it's not so much the near future anymore, I'm going to be doing an interview that I did with a producer-director of TV, and Josh will have taken the audio off of the DVDs that I have. I don't know how he does it, so that you can get to hear pieces of his work, the guy I'm interviewing. So again, you know, as I say every week, if you have needs for IT, for recording, for anything remotely electronic, and you want to work with somebody who's not only talented at it, but kind and reliable, then you want Josh Hackney, and you should go up on my website, thelinshow.com, click on Email Me, and say, I need Josh, and I'll get him for you. And as always, you can click on that email icon and ask me any questions, and I will get back to you. And again, as always, I hope that you heard something that you can use in this show, or something that interested you or amused you or compelled you, because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have got the